Well, I'm very pleased today to welcome back Brian Hughes, consultant solicitor of Shenfield-based Rayner Hughes. So welcome back to Phoenix FM, Brian.
Well, thank you.
And I believe today you're planning to demystify contracts, which I got thoroughly confused over. And the fact is that all of us are handling or engaged in contracts in one form or another virtually on a daily basis. But we tend not to notice, so why should we worry too much about it?
Well, to a degree, that's right. A contract is not necessarily an important or a complicated transaction. You buy a cup of coffee or a pint of beer in a pub, or you catch a bus or a train. All these activities involve a contract. You rent a flat, buy a house, get a job. In all of these activities, two or more persons agree and bind themselves to do something. They're all contracts of various kinds. Contracts that give rise to litigation are a minute proportion of the number of contracts which are made every day. The overwhelming majority of contracts never give rise to any dispute whatever. And where a dispute does arise, it's generally settled without recourse to lawyers or the courts.
So what's the situation when I make a purchase in a shop? Who makes the offer? Does the shop actually offer to sell, or is it the customer who offers to buy?
The fact that goods are for sale may be displayed is not of itself an offer to sell. It's merely an invitation. The offer to buy is made by the customers, and by the customer, and acceptance of the buyer's offer takes place when the customer hands over the purchase price. The fact that there's a purchase price on the goods in question does not constitute an offer to sell. It's the customer who makes the offer to buy. Now, invitations to treat, as they're referred to in legal jargon, come in many forms. Advertisements on TV, in papers, on posters, on hoardings, in the windows of estate agents' offices, etc. The only time that the normal rules don't apply is where an advertisement or poster offers a reward for the return of lost property. If the finder returns the property, knowing of the reward offer, he or she is entitled to the reward. It's not open to the owner to say that he was not making a real offer, but was merely inviting offers. This kind of situation, and this kind only, is sometimes described as a unilateral contract.
Okay, so what's the situation when it comes to auctions?
In this case, the bidder is the offeror, and the auctioneer accepts the bid by striking the table with his hammer. This means that the auctioneer can withdraw any item at any time, provided he hasn't accepted a bid. But an advertisement that a sale will be held without reserve is a definitive offer on the part of the auctioneer. And if the sale actually begins, the auctioneer is bound to accept the highest bid. There was a case in 2001 where the auctioneers offered two new engine analyzer machines, each of which the manufacturer's list price was £14,521. Now, the claimant made the only bid of £200 for each machine, and the auctioneers purported to withdraw the machines from the sale. The court said that the promise to hold the auction without reserve was an offer of a contract, which was accepted by the claimant when he made his bid. So he got the machines worth £29,000. For £400.
I bet that went down well.
I bet, yeah. Like a lead balloon, I think.
I should imagine so. So what's the difference between an enforceable legal contract and a non-enforceable legal contract?
Yeah, well, an enforceable contractual agreement, whether written or oral, has to contain a binding legal obligation. But beware, in certain circumstances, nothing at all needs to have been said or written to create a legally enforceable contract. Mm. If, for example, you conduct yourself in a way that gives the appearance that you've agreed to something, you may be held to have agreed to it, even though in your own mind you haven't. The courts take an impartial objective and not a subjective personal view of what you've done, and will decide from your behavior whether or not you have entered into a legally enforceable agreement. It's not what you think, it's what the court infers from your behavior.
So you can commit yourself legally, although you've not actually used the words, I agree to this, whatever it is, or signed any agreement.
Precisely. For example, where one party to an agreement holds a monopoly position, the other person doesn't really have a choice and can hardly be said to have agreed, but it is nevertheless a legally binding agreement. So if you want to have a water supply to your home, you have no option but to accept that the water will be supplied by one company, while the drainage and sewerage will usually be dealt with by another. Nothing has actually been said, but the user remains liable contractually and bound nevertheless. Absence of choice can also arise where, although there's no monopoly position, one of the parties to the agreement belongs to a group which has agreed to put forward identical terms. Many trade associations, for example, have drawn up standard form contracts upon which their members are willing to contract. One also only has to think of websites and apps where it's basically a matter of, these are our terms, take it or leave them. You know, take it or leave it. The impact of exemption clauses in these standard forms of contract can be considerable, and you should check them carefully when, for example, you receive a holiday or home insurance contract or a carriage of goods or persons contract. Insurers and airlines are particularly good at slipping exemption clauses into their contracts to insure you or carry you or your luggage or goods from one place to another, and there's little you can do about it.
Don't we know it as well? Now, you talk about exemptions, but what happens if a legally binding contract doesn't cover everything that should be taken into account?
Well, this is where the doctrine of implied terms or statutory legislation comes in. The doctrine of implied terms, like you're agreeing to something without being too specific about it, means that terms exist even though they've not been expressly stated by the parties. An implied term is applied where it arises from the presumed intention of the parties to the contract. It's a sort of derivative process arising from the terms that have actually been agreed. But there are also cases where courts have imposed their own additional terms rather than deriving them from what they deduce was the intention of the parties. Over the years, many of these implied terms have been passed into statute law, like the Sale of Goods Act 1979 and the Consumer Rights Act 2014, which I've previously covered in an earlier talk.
So if the courts impose their reading of the implied intention of the parties, presumably they've got to be honoured.
That's true. Implied terms are as enforceable as the terms that are agreed.
So what do you mean by enforceable?
Enforceable, interesting word. It doesn't necessarily mean that a party to a contract can get an order from a court compelling the other party to perform his part of the contract. Whilst a court will sometimes make an order to that effect, called an order of specific performance, it will not always do so. In fact, by far the most usual remedy for breach of contract is an order for damages. In other words, the party at fault is not ordered to perform the contract, but is ordered to make a money payment for not having performed it. That type of order, in lawyers' language, is as much enforcement as is the order for specific performance.
So where does the term binding enter into the equation?
An agreement which doesn't bind the parties, which doesn't contain a legal obligation to do something, is not a contract. But the fact that a contract is legally binding doesn't mean to say that litigation has to result. As I said right at the very beginning, a contract is not necessarily an important or complicated transaction. You buy a cup of coffee in a coffee shop or a pint of beer in a pub, or you catch a bus or train. All these activities involve a contract. The importance of the law of contract in all these things is that at the back of them is its very existence, with its principles and detailed rules, which ensure that the activity of contracting to do or buy anything is basically straightforward and hassle-free.
Brian, thank you very much for all that. I never realised it was so complicated. I had to say just to go and buy a cup of tea or whatever.
Well, they're all
contracts. There you go. Apparently so. Now, look, we can't let you go without you mentioning that you've just gone into print. You've published your own book. So
yes.
Tell us a bit about it. Well, we're going to get you in to talk about this, I have to say, but you need to tell us a bit about it anyway.
Yeah, it arose from the fact that my secretary told me once, Brian, you're a law unto yourself. and I thought, yeah, okay, I'll write a book about that. And I've written this book, which details my various experiences during my life, including in military intelligence in Cyprus and various other things, standing as an MP against Theresa Gorman to get rid of her. It's full of, candid exposures. I think readers will find it interesting that a solicitor can actually be honest and come clean about his life.
So when is the book? It's out now, I take it.
Yeah,
it's listed
on Amazon.
Yeah.
It was listed on Amazon last week. And I'm trying to get it in bookshops as well.
Right.
But I'll probably only get the hardback cover in the bookshops, but
right.
You can buy it on Amazon, and it's in this week's listing.
And can you buy a paperback?
Yeah, that's it.
As well?
The paperback version is like $8.99.
Is it also going on the online as these Kindles or anything like that as well?
No, not that I know of. I mean, right. Amazon are going to publish it and print it in. Where are we? America, mm-hmm. France, Germany, Italy, Spain, and funny enough, Japan. I couldn't work out why Japan, but there we go.
So how much is the paperback version?
The paperback version is $8.99.
Right.
And the hardback version is $16.99.
Right.
And I've got a copy of the hardback version here, and it looks a hell of a lot better than the paperback version.
It looks very impressive, I have to say. Well, look, we're going to have to get you in to come and talk about that very soon, and we'll also be talking about your another subject in the forthcoming weeks, and I think you're looking at negligence, is that right?
Yes, I mean, ladies buying bottles of ginger beer in which there's a half-decomposed snail, and various other aspects of negligence, because it's a buzzword these days, isn't it? Everybody, particularly American lawyers, they sue everybody for negligence.
That's right. All right, well, we'll sort that out and get you to come in and talk about both of those things. Thank you very much indeed, Brian.
It's a great pleasure.